Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now back to Vontae, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Do not forget to download the Radio.com app and search 95.7 The Game. Add it to your favorites and don't miss a second, whether you're at home, in your car, or at work. And use the rewind feature to catch any moments you missed from the last 24 hours. You could also tell your smart speaker, hey Alexa, or hey Google, play 95.7 The Game. One of the many great voices of the San Francisco Giants is on the line, Dave Fleming, who I got to ask you about Sean McDonough, man. I heard you didn't take him out to Westlake Joe's, Dave. We got to talk about that a little bit later here. But first of all, congratulations. Pull a double duty there to PGA Championship at Harding Park. What a spectacular tournament. And, of course, call it the Giants-Dodgers over the weekend. So let's just start with the Giants and Dodgers and start with yesterday's game. Kevin Gausman gets pulled, and that's been the big talking point there. Tyler Rogers struggled there in the seventh inning, obviously, and giving up the three-run homer to A.J. Pollock. What did you make of the decision by Gabe Kapler to go ahead and pull Gausman after 80 pitches?
Well, good morning, guys. Good afternoon, whatever it is. I it's been a long week. I'm a little turned around, actually, in a good way. Nice to talk to you. I disagreed with the decision. I would have left him in. I thought he was just dealing and looked as strong as he did at the beginning of the game. But, you know, by the same token, the Giants have been the most conservative of any of these teams that have started this thing back up again about protecting their pitchers. We've seen a literally historic rash of pitcher arm injuries over the first 2 weeks of the season. There has never been a first 2 weeks of any season in history that's had anywhere close to the number of pitcher injuries that we've had. So in some ways, I think the Giants' approach, which I was, you know, frankly a little skeptical of, I thought, man, they're being really conservative with this coming out of camp and those first few games. I think there's, you know, now 2 weeks in, almost 3 weeks in, it's looking like the Giants were smarter than everybody else in that regard. Now this, you know, you could make a good case that this was a different instance and Gausman looked fine, but I think the Giants have a real specific plan about how they want to keep everybody fresh and healthy. And so, look, I would have left him in, but I think it's part of a bigger plan here with what the Giants are doing. And ultimately, you know, there were three different Giants relievers who've had some success already this year, who I thought were pretty good matchups for the guys that they were facing, who ultimately just did not pitch well. You know, at some level, those guys have to pick up their manager and say, hey, he's putting faith in us. We can protect this lead. And they didn't do it. So I know the manager is always going to get criticized for that kind of stuff. I think overall Gabe's done a really good job with this team thus far. So I'm willing to give him a pass, even if I disagreed with the way yesterday was handled.
Dave, has Gabe Kapler done anything that surprised you, or is he the kind of manager that you expected after watching him 2 years in Philly and hearing about him over the last 2 years in Philly?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been surprised only because, you know, Gabe is a polarizing guy, and there are a lot of people around the game who maybe because of, you know, he does things differently and some of the stuff from when he was a player, you know, Fitness Magazine. You know, I think there's just sort of a general feeling out there from some people of, hey, this guy's phony, or this guy's too good to be true, or this guy, you know, is vain or whatever. And I have not found those things to be true at all. Gabe is a genuine person. What he tells you, he believes. He's not, there's no agenda. He's not, you know, when we talk to him in private, we do these calls with him every day where the four of us just get to chat with him, you know, just to have, you know, sort of like we would do in a normal season, go down to the office and just sort of see what's going on. It's very helpful for us. He is totally forthcoming to us there. So, you know, I found those stereotypes of him to be totally untrue. As far as managing the team, I mean, I think Gabe is a planner. He is, you know, there's some people who like to wing it. There's some people who want to be super prepared. Gabe is the guy who studied for the test really hard and prepares for every contingency. And I think he is the kind of manager who tries ahead of time to think about, okay, what are my best matchups? What hitters match up with what pitchers, vice versa? Late in the game, how do I want it to go? And I think over time, as he gets more experience, he will loosen his grip on those plans a little bit. Because I think every manager does. But I'm okay with him. I mean, the guy is just totally grinding it out. I've never been around. I mean, Bruce Bochy was super prepared. This guy is ultra prepared. So you cannot blame him for a lack of effort. This guy is pouring his heart and soul into this job. And sometimes I think that can almost be a detriment. Sometimes I think you have to just sort of say, you know what, today the plan is we're just going to see how it goes. And I think that'll happen over time.
Dave, let's talk Yaz. I know he showed flashes last year. And now this year, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just wild, and I've heard of late bloomers. But when you see him day in, day out, do you think he – I mean, what goes through your mind in regard to long term? I know he's not 21 or 22, but he's a great story, and I just wonder how long this thing can last.
All really good questions, and maybe right now the most important questions the Giants have. He has gotten even better from last year, because I would argue that – it was more than just flashes. I mean, I would argue that last year he was just a really good player. But there's no doubt that all of us, including the Giants decision makers, wanted to see, is that real or not? You know, is that sustainable? And so far the answer is not only is it sustainable, he's gotten better. He's chasing fewer pitches. He's walking a lot more. He's swinging and missing less. His eye at the plate has gotten even better. It's turned him into a much better overall player, to the point where I could make a really good argument that he's been the best player in the National League so far this year. You play center field and do what he's done offensively, that is just a super valuable player. Now, is that long-term? What's the deal with that? He is 29 years old. That's not usually prospect age, but I would also say that these last few years, if they've taught me anything, watching Justin Turner go from a nobody to one of the best hitters in the league, watching Max Muncy hit .175 and get released and then turn into one of the best power hitters in the National League. There are many other examples, that, including even some that aren't Dodgers,
right,
of players who have gotten better as they've aged and learned how to do things differently. And to me, Mike Yastrzemski is in that category of a guy who, you know, he piled up experience in the minor leagues and never was a big-time prospect, but he has learned how. Here's what the Giants say about Yastrzemski. He has a gift for getting the ball in the air to all parts of the field. And in this day and age, when you can hit the ball hard, swing at the right pitches, and elevate, keep it off the ground, you're going to hit doubles and home runs. And that is what he has learned how to do that. And I am a firm believer that the technology that has come about in the last 5 years, all these super slow cameras, this stuff that allows players to dive to the, like, just the minutia of their mechanics and how they're doing things, that technology has allowed players to make changes like no point in the history of the game. And so I think it is sustainable, because I think this guy has figured out the formula of how do I get the ball in the air, hitting it hard, hit for power. Even a guy who's not huge, I mean, he's a strong guy, but he's not a big guy. But he has learned how to do that, and I think it's going to last.
No doubt. I mean, that two-out, two-strike approach he has at the plate, including yesterday, Dave, just very, very impressive there, especially that AB in the top of the fifth inning. Dave Fleming on with Bonte Steiny, Guru, here on 95.7 The Game. Dave, obviously this is the new normal, right, for now. Broadcasting with no fans And you did it at both. You did it at Harding Park for the PGA Championship, and you did it at Oracle Park, where even the Giants, when they're on the road, you're at the broadcast booth down at Oracle Park. So how weird, or what is the adjustment you've had to make as a broadcaster without the fans to start with Harding Park with the PGA Championship over the weekend?
Yeah, Harding Park, golf is perfectly suited. Not that we don't miss the fans. We do, big time. And I particularly missed the fans yesterday. I mean, you know, final round of a championship Sunday, the fans were missed. And the roars that rattle around a big event like that, there's no question that you can't replace that. But golf, to me, because if you cover it the right way, and hopefully we at ESPN did this over the week, is if you cut to enough shots and keep it fast-paced, it's easy to forget that there aren't fans there. If you're just seeing a ton of golf, let's go to two, let's go to five, let's go back to one, let's go out to 13, just cut, 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 let's see as much golf as we can. To me, you don't notice the quiet as much because you're seeing a lot of action. It's harder in the other sports because you have one game. It's not 156 players. So it is hard to not notice that there is an emptiness there. Now, on baseball, we've done a pretty good job, I would say, with this sort of hum, ballpark sound atmosphere. I think when you're listening and watching, you know, I'm not saying you can't tell, but I think it's a pretty normal feel. You know, not closer than I thought it would be to normal. For us, though, sitting there in these empty, quiet ballparks, it's not normal at all. And it's been hard to adjust to. And the hardest thing is when the team's on the road and we are sitting in our booth and there's an empty field in front of us, I cannot help from looking up at that field like the game that we're watching on the TV is being played in front. I just keep doing it over and over again. Ball gets hit, I look up. Like somehow magically all the players are going to appear before my eyes, and they're not there. And it's been really strange to adjust to that. And hopefully you don't notice it as a listener or a viewer too much, but we notice it for sure.
Golf worked extremely well, I thought, Dave. Almost to the point, as a viewer, it you don't miss much without the fans, especially if you're kind of locked in. But I want to ask you a little bit about Mark. Ask you a little bit about Morikawa. So, you know, we saw Justin Spieth a few years back doing extremely well, and now he's not doing as well. And now we look at a guy like Morikawa and we say, geez, how good's this guy going to be? Is there something to golfers as they get older and I don't know, start families or begin to develop other priorities that it's almost impossible to stay on top for an extended period of time?
Yeah, I think number one, the personal life does play into it because golf is an obsessive sport. Like golf, all these sports are. I mean, if you want to be at that level in any of these sports, there's an obsession that needs to take place. But golf is so technical. So I think that is an issue for some of these players. Maybe it's part of the issue for Rory right now. You know, Rory talks a lot. When you talk to Rory, who's just a, you know, speaking of somebody who's easy to root for, just a delightful person, somebody you would really want to hang out with. Like Rory, you would like to be friends with him. He's just a good person and fun and has a great attitude on life. But lately you hear him talking and it's a lot of, hey, golf isn't the only thing for me. And, you know, like that's hard to reconcile with being the best in the world. And he's still really good, but there is a level of obsession that's required. Number two, I do believe what happens to a lot of these players is they have some success and here come the equipment guys and here come the coaches and here come the other people who want to not just mess with, but they want a piece of everything.
Right.
And it just becomes extremely distracting for a lot of these players. And the guys who can just say no, who can say, get out of here, I don't need you, I'm good, those are the guys to me who have the best level of success. And I hope Colin's a guy who can say no. It's a hard skill to learn. It's hard to say no. But if you can learn how to tell those people, I'm good, I'm happy, I have the setup I need, I don't want that extra, I don't want this, I don't want that, you are ahead of the game. And I'm hoping Colin, it seems to me he is. I mean, Colin's a, but, you know, Jordan Spieth is a really smart guy. who gets it, who knows what's going on, and I think it's been hard for Jordan to do that sometimes. So, you know, I hope that happens with Morikawa because, gosh, is he talented.
Yeah.
Dave, we like to ask the tough questions on BS&G. So we all know you're a Stanford alum. How hard was it watching a Cal Bear and Morikawa win the tournament yesterday?
I had a lot of Cal people. I had a lot of Cal people texting me, and you know what? I like the kid a lot. He's got a super. It was not hard at all. The golf rivalry, I have to say, isn't that intense. The big match, I'm just not grinding out the results of the big match every year. So I was happy to watch him play. And I, you know, all kidding aside, I believe that his shot at 16, which is the hole that I covered most of the week. I mean, that was my tower, my hole. And considering the circumstances, the club, the shot, I believe is one of the single greatest shots in the history of golf. And I think we will look back on his drive on 16 as one of the greatest shots in golf history. It was that good, that spectacular. I was so impressed. I was speechless when he hit that thing. I just thought, well, that's one of the greatest moments I've ever seen. And to pull that off, with those guys chasing him, he knew the leaderboard. Yeah. He knew the caliber of players. You know that hole's coming. You think you got to hit a great shot to make a birdie on that hole, and for him to do that, to me, that swing alone tells me this is a guy who can win a bunch of majors.
Wow! Like
I think that guy to pull that off in that moment says to me he is going to win 5 majors or more.
Wow, Paul Casey was talking about it, Dave, and I think you're right. A lot of people share your sentiments about that shot on 16. Paul Casey, I believe, was teeing up, and he said he saw the shot and was like, boy, this is going to be an uphill climb to try to catch Colin after that shot on 16. Just want to ask you your quick thoughts here. I know you're tired, and we need to get you off the air, man, so you can get your rest, but just talk about Hardy Park and seeing the city shine like it did, especially during these times. I walk around that lake all the time with my girlfriend, and just seeing Harding Park and the city shine like that, what did it mean for you, Dave? You're basically one of us now, being a local guy. So just talk about what it meant to you to see the PGA Championship at Hardy Park and the way it looked and the aesthetics and the way you guys broadcasted the event.
Yeah, it was really special for me. It was, you know, this is our first year with ESPN with extensive PGA coverage. Our new deal kicked in, so this was new for us. And just the coincidence of me being able to work this event at home here was, I will never forget that, how cool that was for me to be a part of it. And then from the city perspective, you know, two things. Number one, Harding Park has been a labor of love for a lot of people around here to create that place that everybody can access and come play. That's a city course that's as good as it is. So that part of it is just awesome. And I hope, and I really believe strongly that this is going to happen, that this helps vault Harding Park even higher into that sort of list of places that people want to come visit, want to come play. Locals want to get out there and play as much as they can. I think the tour will be back. I know it's coming back, and hopefully the Steph Curry event happens. I don't know that that's officially been announced, but I think it has. But, you know, even if it's, you know, not even just that, having other major championships here, I think now, after the way this week went, is almost a certainty. The PGA of America absolutely loved this week and the way the course played. And my final thought is that we have a different brand of golf out here. So for people like me who love the sport, California golf, especially Northern California golf, is very different. It's different than golf anywhere else in the world. And what we saw this week was reflective of that. And thank goodness the weather was the way it was. Mm-hmm. The fog, the marine layer, the wind, the cool, all of it helped make the players experience what we experience when we play around here. And there's nothing like it. And for me, it's my favorite kind of golf in the world. And so I'm just tickled that we had a – because, you know, look, this is no knock on the lake course at Olympic, but because the same things come into play at Olympic, but Olympic is such a – I don't want to say quirky, but it's such a different kind of golf course.
Right.
That I think sometimes that obscure – Harding Park played like California golf to me, and that's what I loved about it. It was just exactly the experience that all of us get when we play here every day. And, gosh, it was good for the city and good for that golf course.
Dave, so good to hear from you, man. Get some rest, man. You might be the hardest working broadcaster in show business here. I know we're running up against it, man. So I was going to ask you about college football and what's going on with that, because I know you call a lot of college football games. But, Dave, go get some rest. Good hearing from you. And let's see if the Giants can bounce back against the Astros tonight in what should be very, very interesting, especially considering what the Astros are coming off of here.
No kidding. The Astros got a lot going on. I wish we could see Dusty. I'm fine. But I will say this. I was definitely the hardest working guy this last week. I will not dispute you on that. It's hard to call it work sometimes, but I'm gonna do one event per day this week and keep it to that.
Dave, man, take care, man. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
See you guys.